Michael, darling, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with me.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Before we talk too much about the exhibition, let's talk about Takashi Murakami. Who is he, and what should people know about the man often referred to as Japan's Warhol?
One thing that I know about him is that he is an incredibly serious artist. He knows art history, wants to make a contribution to art history, wants his work to be known 300 years from now. And that ambition and drive and intelligence is in the work. But oftentimes people see the bells and whistles and the colors and the smiley faces and other things, and they can't see that. And so I really tried to make an exhibition that shows this really dedicated, serious, committed side of this artist.
And you mentioned it yourself with these bells and whistles. You know, most people who will encounter Murakami's work, they might think of Hello Kitty or Kuro Kuro Kuropi, but his artwork is much deeper than that. Can you talk a little bit about some of the themes that he integrates into the artwork that may not be easily accessible?
We included some of his earliest mature paintings when he was working in this style called Nihonga, and he actually has a PhD in this particular type of traditional Japanese modern painting. And in those early pictures, there are images of animals like turtles and fish and things, but often in the background, there are images of nuclear power plants and things like that. So ideas about nuclear destruction, both from power plants in a more modern sense, but even the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the history of Japan as a defeated nation is, and the psychological trauma of that is all through the work. And even more recently, the big tsunami and earthquake in 2011 deeply affected him and really changed the course of his work in a lot of ways. And so there's a sadness and a real deep historical quality to the work that that I think comes through and that people, again, kind of don't necessarily see.
Because you did bring up some of these older works, can you talk a little bit about how the artwork has changed over that period? I know you mentioned the themes there, but visually, how might they be different for someone who's not accustomed to seeing a different sort of Murakami?
No, I think that's another thing that luckily plays out very clearly in the show is the very earliest paintings are quite simple. There are even some small canvases where he was painting them just by hand, by himself, little very simple images of Mr. Dobe on single color backgrounds. And you can see as time goes on that his ambition starts to make the paintings more ambitious in size, in complexity, in how the paint is actually applied on canvas, to a point where right now he employs hundreds of people in his studio working in New York and in Tokyo that are working around the clock. And it's about making these paintings that are gigantic and totally overwhelming and consuming. And the detail and the craftsmanship is like nothing else that's being made out there today. And you can only really make these with these teams of people that are laboring on their hands and knees to kind of craft these incredible, you know, really jewel-like paintings. You might see them on a digital image or something and not get even an iota of the detail that's in these things. So to see them here in person, get right up close to them is pretty incredible.
He makes a lot of merchandise, right? There's shirts, there's plush dolls, there's mouse pads even. And I asked him a little about his brand and why he's become so popular. And I want to know why you think he's so popular in the Western world.
Yeah. You know, I have come to a different answer to that than maybe when I first started on this exhibition. I used to think that this popularity came from the recognizability of his imagery, especially the things that are a bit more cartoonish, like the flowers and Mr. Dobe and things like that, that people recognize and attribute to him immediately. But I think that the way that he has created so much of merchandise that's not just multi-million dollar paintings, but can be a $5 keychain or a $10 mouse pad or something like that, it has democratized his art in a way that normal people, young people, can have a bit of Murakami and have a connection to them that's totally authentic. You know, it's not watered down. He considers those to be really kind of important and totally genuine objects. And so that's allowed a whole variety of different generations to make contact with his work and have a connection that I don't think you have when somebody somebody's just working at the rarefied level of culture where it's only in high-end art galleries and museums and sells for, you know, lots and lots and lots of money. And that, I think, has created this connection with his public. But even more recently, I think his work on Instagram and how he is, again, pulling back the curtain on his creative process, showing himself ragged and with the flu and picking wax out of his ears and showing paintings unfinished and stressing out about deadlines. I mean, he's letting all that out, and people recognize that, wow, there's a human behind this work, and maybe I can empathize with what he's doing in a way that, again, you don't find with other artists that are of his stature in a way.
As a reporter, I get to go into artists' studios, behind the scenes of a theatrical performance. And as a curator, I have to imagine there's some sort of similar sort of behind the scenes. Can I ask you what maybe the most interesting thing you've learned about Takashi Murakami has been?
I think one of the things that's great about him is his insecurity and his anxiety. And I think he owns it and expresses it and tells people that he's going through that as he's, you know, trying to prepare a new exhibition or something. And of course, I think that also is what fuels him. I think he likes being kind of on that edge and pushing himself. And so it's never just a lazy day in the studio where he's just dabbing some paint on the canvas. You know, there's always some task that often can be a seemingly insurmountable task that he puts in front of himself, and that's what pushes him forward. And I think when people see the scale and the complexity of these paintings and even the sculptures, they'll recognize that, you know, this is not just easy, casual work, but there's something really intense going on there.
Well, Michael, darling, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. It's fun for me to talk about this.